Chapter 5. Reclaim Your Personal Power. One Saturday morning a few years back, my wife Elizabeth and I were engaged in a heated discussion over something I had done. Like many of our arguments, Elizabeth felt helpless to get me to see my denial. At the same time, I felt unjustly persecuted. Finally, when the argument reached an emotional crescendo, Elizabeth shouted in frustration, "You're nothing but a wimp!" Elizabeth left the room, and I retreated to the bathroom to dry my eyes. After a few minutes of reflection, Elizabeth knocked on the bathroom door. I assumed she was coming back to take another stab at her wounded prey. Instead, she apologized. "I'm sorry for calling you a wimp. That wasn't fair." "Actually," I responded, wiping a tear away, "it was the most accurate thing you said all morning." Nice guys are wimps. This may not sound like a nice thing to say, but it's true. Nice guys tend to be wimpy victims because their life paradigm and childhood survival mechanisms require them to sacrifice their personal power. As stated in previous chapters, a common denominator for nice guys is that they did not get their needs met in a timely, healthy fashion in childhood. These little boys were helpless to prevent people from abandoning them, neglecting them, abusing them, using them, or smothering them. They were victims to the people who failed to love them, pay attention to them, meet their needs, and protect them. As a result of these childhood experiences, feeling like a victim feels familiar for most nice guys. These men tend to see others as causing the problems they are experiencing in life. As a consequence, they often feel frustrated, helpless, resentful, and rageful. You can see it in their body language. You can hear it in their voices. "It's not fair. How come she gets to make the rules? I always give more than I get. If she would just..." A paradigm of powerlessness. In an attempt to cope with their childhood abandonment experiences, all nice guys developed the same paradigm. If I am good, then I will be loved, get my needs met, and have a problem-free life. Unfortunately, this paradigm not only produces the opposite of what is desired, it guarantees nothing but feelings of perpetual powerlessness. Even though nice guys are obsessed with trying to create a smooth, problem-free life, two major factors prevent them from attaining this goal. The first is that they are attempting the impossible. Life is not smooth. Human existence is by nature chaotic. Life is filled with experiences that are unpredictable and beyond anyone's control. Therefore, trying to create a predictable life in which everything always goes as planned is an exercise in futility. In spite of the fact that we live in a chaotic, unpredictable world, nice guys are not only convinced that life can be smooth, they believe it should be. This belief is the direct result of their childhood abandonment experiences. The unpredictability of not having their needs met in a timely, judicious fashion was not only frightening, it was potentially life-threatening. In an attempt to cope with the uncertainty of their chaotic childhood, nice guys developed a belief system that if they could just do everything right, then everything would go right in their lives. Sometimes these men also developed belief systems that their childhood was ideal and problem-free, the opposite of reality, in order to cope with their abandonment experiences. These were all distorted beliefs, but these illusions helped these helpless little boys deal with the turmoil that was out of their control. A second reason nice guys never accomplish their goal of having a smooth life is that they do the opposite of what works. By approaching adult situations with survival mechanisms that were formed when they were naive and powerless, they are ensured of having very little success in creating anything that resembles stability in their lives. The dependence on these ineffectual survival mechanisms keeps nice guys trapped in the memory of their fearful childhood experiences and perpetuates a vicious cycle. The more frightened they are, the more they use their childhood survival mechanisms. The more they use these ineffectual mechanisms, the less successful they are at negotiating the complexities, challenges, and ambiguities of life. The less successful they are, the more fearful they become. You get the picture. Overcoming the wimp factor. Reclaiming personal power. I define personal power as a state of mind in which a person is confident he can handle whatever may come. This kind of power not only successfully deals with problems, challenges, and adversity, it actually welcomes them, meets them head on, and is thankful for them. Personal power isn't the absence of fear. Even the most powerful people have fear. Personal power is the result of feeling fear but not giving in to the fear. There is a solution to the helplessness and vulnerability nice guys feel. Recovery from the nice guy syndrome allows nice guys to embrace the personal power that is their birthright. Reclaiming personal power includes surrendering, dwelling in reality, expressing feelings, facing fears, developing integrity, setting boundaries. Breaking free, Activity 17. Look over the following list of ways nice guys try to create a smooth, problem-free life. Write down an example of how you used each coping mechanism in childhood. Then, next to each, give an example of how you use this strategy to try to control your world in adulthood. Note how each of these behaviors keeps you feeling like a powerless victim. Share this information with a safe person. Doing it right. Playing it safe. Anticipating and fixing. Trying not to rock the boat. Being charming and helpful. Never being a moment's problem. Using covered contracts. Controlling and manipulating. Caretaking and pleasing. Withholding information. Repressing feelings. Making sure other people don't have feelings. Avoiding problems and difficult situations. Surrendering helps nice guys reclaim their personal power. Ironically, the most important aspect of reclaiming personal power and getting what one wants in love and life is surrender. Surrender doesn't mean giving up. It means letting go of what one can't change and changing what one can. Letting go doesn't mean not caring or not trying. Letting go means letting be. It is like opening up a tightly clenched fist and releasing the tension stored inside. At first, the fingers will want to return to their former clenched position. The hand almost has to be retrained to open up and relax. So it is with learning how to surrender and let go. Surrender allows recovering nice guys to let go and respond to life's complex beauty, rather than trying to control it. Surrender allows these men to see life as a laboratory for learning, growth, and creativity. Surrender allows recovering nice guys to see each life experience as a gift from the universe to stimulate growth, healing, and learning. Instead of asking, "Why is this happening to me?" the recovering nice guy can respond to life's challenges by pondering, "What do I need to learn from this situation?" Gil exemplifies the process of letting go. Gil had reached a crisis point in his relationship with his girlfriend, Barb. Gil had originally begun couples counseling with Barb to fix her problem. He claimed that she was depressed, angry all the time, and had no interest in sex. He reported that he constantly walked on eggshells trying to make sure he never did anything to upset her. Gil and Barb were both in their early 50s and had been living together for 8 years. They had discussed marriage. But both felt apprehension due to the unsettled nature of their relationship. After a couple months of couples counseling, Gil began to entertain the idea that all the problems in the relationship might not be about Barb. He began looking at his own caretaking and controlling behavior. He also became aware that he had few outside interests and no male friends. After a couple more months, he joined a No More Mr. Nice Guy men's group. Even as Gil began to look at his own problems and ineffective life patterns, he kept seeking the key for making Barb better. It was a slow process, but Gil began to see that he could not do anything to change Barb, and that he was going to have to focus on himself. As he began to let go and detach from Barb, he felt tremendous anxiety. He had a deep fear that he was going to get in trouble. He also believed that Barb couldn't handle her problems without his help. With the support of the group, Gil surrendered. He came to realize that he would be okay, regardless of whether he and Barb made it as a couple. Much to his surprise, their relationship began to improve. As he let go of trying to solve her problems and detached from her moods, Gil found that he had fewer frustrations and resentments. He even began to see Barb as a gift to help him work through his issues with his angry father. A year later, he announced to his men's group that he and Barb had set a date to get married. He reported that they were getting along better than he would have ever imagined. He shared that the turning point seemed to be when he made the decision that he didn't care whether they made it together or not. That decision represented a conscious letting go of trying to control something that was clearly not in his control. Ironically, he shared that the process of letting go allowed him to receive what he really wanted. Breaking Free, Activity 18. Think about one gift from the universe that you initially resisted but can now see as a positive stimulus for growth or discovery. Are there any similar gifts in your life right now to which you need to surrender? Share this information with a safe person. Dwelling in reality helps nice guys reclaim their personal power. Nice guys try to control their world by creating belief systems about people and situations that are not based in reality. They then act as if these beliefs are accurate. This is why their behavior often seems illogical to outside observers. Les, an unassuming man in his late 30s, had a brief affair with a coworker. During his initial therapy session, I asked Les why he thought he had an affair. "I don't know," he replied. "I guess I just wanted some attention." I continued by asking him how he expressed his anger toward his wife. With a puzzled look, he responded, "I never get angry at Sarah." "You mean you two have been married for 10 years and she's never done anything to piss you off?" I asked in mock surprise. To listen to Les talk about his wife, it was evident he had her on a pedestal. It was equally clear that he was not dwelling in reality when it came to his marriage. When I asked specific questions about his wife, Les revealed how Sarah had gained 60 pounds since they married, refused to cook, was depressed, no longer wanted to have sex with him, treated him with contempt, and would rage at him without provocation. In spite of all these things, Les maintained that his wife was the woman of his dreams, and that he loved her dearly. Throughout the next few months of therapy, I consistently held up a mirror of reality to Les in regard to his wife and his relationship with her. This was a slow and difficult process. Les needed to see Sarah in a certain way because of his fear of being alone. To dwell in reality might mean he would have to do something frightening or difficult. As Les began to face his fears of abandonment, He also began to see his wife more accurately. This change allowed him to start asking for what he wanted, set boundaries, and express his feelings of resentment and anger. It soon became apparent that Sarah had no desire to look at her role in the relationship or make any kind of changes. Though it was painful and frightening, accepting things as they really were allowed Les to make the decision to move out and file for divorce. Dwelling in reality allowed Les to look at why he had created the kind of system he had with Sarah. It put him in a position to make difficult but realistic decisions. It allowed him to access the inner power he needed to make significant changes in his life. It also opened the door for him to find someone who was available to help him create the kind of relationship he wanted. Breaking Free, Activity 19. Pick one area in your life in which you routinely feel frustrated or out of control. Step back from the situation. Is the difficulty you are having with the situation the result of you trying to project the reality you want to believe onto it? If you had to accept the reality of this situation, how might you change your response to it? Expressing feelings helps nice guys reclaim their personal power. Nice guys are terrified of two kinds of feeling, their own and everyone else's. Any kind of intensity causes nice guys to feel out of control. As children, feeling things intensely invited either negative attention or no attention at all. Therefore, it came to feel safer to clamp a lid down tightly on any emotion that might attract too much negative attention or might cause them to feel abandoned. I remember early in our marriage when Elizabeth would express her frustration over my inability to share what I was feeling. Like most nice guys, I had come to see feelings as a dangerous thing. After more than 30 years of conditioning, I had no clue what Elizabeth wanted from me. Even as I began to become aware of my feelings, I often kept them to myself. It is almost comical how infrequently it crosses a nice guy's mind to tell his partner what he is feeling. On one occasion, Elizabeth confronted me when I shared a feeling with her that I had been harboring for some time. "Why didn't you tell me about that when you first felt it?" she questioned. "I'm doing better," I replied in typical nice guy fashion. "It only took me 2 weeks to get around to telling you." I frequently hear nice guys rationalize the withholding of their feelings by claiming they don't want to hurt anyone. The truth is they are covering their own butts. What they are really saying is that they don't want to do anything that might recreate their childhood experiences. They're really not trying to protect anyone from harm. They're just trying to keep their world smooth and under control. I frequently tell nice guys, "Your feelings are just feelings. They won't kill you." Regardless of whether a nice guy is feeling anxious, helpless, shameful, lonely, rageful, or sad, his feelings aren't life-threatening. The goal of teaching nice guys to embrace their feelings is not to make them soft and touchy-feely. Men who are in touch with their feelings are powerful, assertive, and energized. Contrary to what many nice guys believe, they don't have to become more like women in order to have their feelings. This is why I support men in learning about their feelings from other men. While there is no formula or right way to get reconnected with repressed feelings, support groups can teach, model, and support this slow but important process. In a sense, a therapy group can become like a family. In this environment, recovering nice guys can ask for the kind of help in dealing with feelings that was never available to them as children. Since feelings are often messy, a group environment can represent a supportive place to momentarily feel out of control. Here, Recovering nice guys find out they won't fall overboard and drown if they rock the boat. They also learn that they won't shrivel up and die if someone else around them has a feeling. Feelings are an integral part of human existence. By learning the language of feelings, recovering nice guys can begin to let go of a lifetime of unnecessary baggage. As they do, they experience a newfound energy, optimism, intimacy, and zest for life. This reality hit home with me a few years ago in a very unexpected way. Elizabeth came to me one day and revealed that she had backed into a parked car. She felt like a bad little child and waited for me to scold her. Even before I had a chance to respond, she began to put up a wall and withdraw as a way of protecting herself. I got angry, not about the car, but about the manner in which she was pushing me away. I expressed my feelings clearly and directly. Without shaming or attacking, I said, "Stop." With an intensity of emotion that surprised both of us, I let her know that I wasn't pushing her away, and I wasn't going to accept her pushing me away. I told her that I did have feelings about the car, but I had even stronger feelings about how she was acting. I said, "Just let me have my feelings about the car, and then we'll work it out." Later, Elizabeth revealed to me, and several of her friends, how much safer she felt when I had my feelings. She was able to hear that I was upset about the car, but that I didn't think she was bad, and I wasn't going to abandon her. The fact that I had such intensity about not letting her push me away actually made her feel secure and loved. As a result, she felt safe to stay connected to me and hear my feelings about the car. The whole incident brought us closer and has since provided a reference point for the healing power of expressing emotions in powerful and direct ways. Breaking Free, Activity 20. Some guidelines about expressing feelings. Don't focus on the other person. "You are making me mad." Instead, take responsibility for what you are feeling. "I am feeling angry." Don't use feeling words to describe what you are thinking, as in, "I feel like Joe was trying to take advantage of me." Instead, pay attention to what you are experiencing in your body. "I'm feeling helpless and frightened." In general, try to begin feeling statements with "I" rather than "you." Try to avoid the crutch of saying, "I feel like," as in, "I feel like you were being mean to me." Facing fears helps nice guys reclaim their personal power. Fear is a normal part of human experience. Everyone experiences fear, even those people who seem to be fearless. Healthy fear is a warning sign that danger may be approaching. This is different from the fear nice guys experience on a daily basis. For nice guys, fear is recorded at the cellular level. It is a memory of every seemingly life-threatening experience they ever had. It was born of a time of absolute dependency and helplessness. It originated in not having their needs met in a timely, judicious manner. It was fostered by fearful systems that discouraged risk and rewarded conservatism. It was heightened by the reality that life is messy and chaotic, and any kind of change promises a journey into the unknown. I call this kind of fear memory fear. Because of the memory fear created in childhood, nice guys still approach the world as if it is dangerous and overpowering. To cope with these realities, nice guys typically hunker down and play it safe. As a consequence of playing it safe, nice guys experience a lot of needless suffering. Suffering because they avoid new situations. Suffering because they stay with the familiar. Suffering because they procrastinate, avoid, and fail to finish what they start. Suffering because they make a bad situation worse by doing more of what has never worked in the past. Suffering because they expend so much energy trying to control the uncontrollable. Nolan is a good example of the paralyzing effect of memory fear. Nolan came to see me on the recommendation of a friend. He had been separated from his wife for a year, but was having a difficult time making a final decision about getting divorced. Nolan frequently told me he was confused. This confusion was mixed with a strong dose of guilt. Nolan constantly weighed all the issues. What if he left his wife, and later realized that it was a mistake? What if he messed up his kids' lives? What if his children never wanted to talk to him again? What if his friends thought he was bad? What if God sent him to hell? As long as Nolan stayed confused about what he should do, he remained paralyzed. When I told Nolan that I didn't think he was confused, but that he was afraid, he was initially defensive. He didn't like seeing himself as being fearful. As we explored the memory fear from his childhood, he came to realize that any mistakes he made as a child seemed to have everlasting consequences. He believed the same would be true in his present situation. Behind Nolan's fear of making a decision was the childhood fear that he wouldn't be able to handle whatever happened. Together, we brainstormed all the possible consequences of divorcing his wife. Behind each potential consequence was the unconscious belief that he wouldn't be able to handle it. I sent Nolan home with his list of fears, along with a more accurate statement about each. No matter what happened, he would handle it. The following week, Nolan proudly announced that he had contacted an attorney. Even though he felt tremendous fear and anxiety, he found courage in repeating his newfound mantra, "I can handle it." Facing present-day fears is the only way to overcome memory fear. Every time the nice guy confronts a fear, he unconsciously creates a belief that he can handle whatever he is afraid of. This challenges his memory fear. Challenging this memory fear makes the things outside of him seem less threatening. As these things seem less frightening, he feels more confident in confronting them. The more this confidence grows, the less threatening life seems. Breaking Free, Activity 21. List one fear that has been controlling your life. Once you decide to confront the fear, begin repeating to yourself, "I can handle it. No matter what happens, I will handle it." Keep repeating this mantra until you take action and stop feeling fear. Developing integrity helps nice guys reclaim their personal power. Most nice guys pride themselves on being honest and trustworthy. In reality, nice guys are fundamentally dishonest. They have the ability to tell a lie or withhold the truth and still believe the illusion that they are basically honest people. Since dishonesty is a fear-based behavior, telling lies and withholding the truth robs nice guys of their personal power. I define lying as anything less than the truth. This may seem evident to most people, but it is important to define lying and telling the truth because nice guys are adept at creating definitions that justify their behavior. It is not unusual to hear them make statements like, "I'm pretty honest," or "I'm honest most of the time," without the slightest awareness of their contradiction of terms. In an almost childlike manner, nice guys will often offer the following defense: "I didn't lie, I just didn't tell everything." Joel was the owner of a successful construction company. On occasion, he would leave work a little early and catch an afternoon movie before heading home. Because he feared his wife's disapproval, he would refrain from telling her how he spent those afternoons. He would always have some cover story ready in case she tried to call him while he was out. The irony of the situation is that there was absolutely no reason for Joel to lie to his wife. In spite of all the effort Joel put into hiding the truth of his whereabouts, it never crossed his mind that he was lying to himself and to his wife. The bottom line was that Joel's lying perpetuated a fear-based relationship with his wife and robbed him of his personal power. When nice guys are learning to tell the truth, I encourage them to pay attention to the things they least want others to know and what they least want to reveal. These are the things they are most likely to hold back and the things they most need to tell. Sometimes they have to practice telling a certain truth several times until all of these pieces of information get told. Sometimes, after telling the truth, nice guys will report that it was a mistake because someone reacted with anger. Telling the truth is not a magic formula for having a smooth life, but living a life of integrity is actually easier than living one built around deceit and distortion. Developing integrity is an essential part of recovery from the nice guy syndrome. My definition of integrity is about deciding what feels right and doing it. The alternative is using the committee approach. This method of decision-making and acting is based on trying to guess what everyone else would think is right. Following this committee approach is the quickest path to confusion, fear, powerlessness, and dishonesty. When applying the definition above, there are two ways to be out of integrity, but only one way to be in it. When a nice guy never even bothers to ask himself, "What do I think is right?" or uses the committee method, he will always be out of integrity. If he asks himself what he believes is right but doesn't do it, he is also out of integrity. Only by asking himself what he believes is right and then doing it does he become a man of integrity. Breaking Free, Activity 22. Choose one area in which you have been out of integrity. Identify your fear that keeps you from telling the truth or doing the right thing. Reveal this situation to a safe person. Then, go and tell the truth, or do what you have to do to make the situation right. Tell yourself you can handle it. Since telling the truth may create a crisis for you or others, have faith that everyone involved will survive this crisis. Setting boundaries helps nice guys reclaim their personal power. Boundaries are essential for survival. Learning to set boundaries allows nice guys to stop feeling like helpless victims and reclaim their personal power. Boundary setting is one of the most fundamental skills I teach to recovering nice guys. I demonstrate the concept of boundaries by laying a shoestring on the ground. I tell the nice guy that I am going to cross his boundary and push him backwards. I instruct him to stop me when he begins to feel uncomfortable. It is not unusual for a nice guy to stand well back from the line, allowing me to violate his space several steps before he even begins to respond. Once I start pushing, it's not uncommon for a nice guy to let me push him back several steps before he does anything to stop me. Sometimes a nice guy will let me push him all the way to the wall. I use this exercise as a graphic demonstration of the need for boundaries in all areas of life. Nice guys are usually more comfortable backpedaling, giving in, and keeping the peace. They believe if they take one more step backward, the other person will quit pushing, and then everything will be smooth. It's not unusual for recovering nice guys to go a little overboard when they first learn about boundary setting. They have a tendency to swing from one extreme to another. They become kamikaze boundary setters. They try to set boundaries with a sledgehammer or machete. They usually learn in time that they only have to use as much resistance as necessary to get the job done. In time, they also learn that boundary setting isn't about getting other people to be different, but about getting themselves to be different. If someone is crossing their boundary, it isn't the other person's problem. It is theirs. Because of memory fear, nice guys often unconsciously reinforce the very behaviors they find intolerable. Due to their childhood conditioning, they teach the people around them that they will accept having their boundaries violated. As recovering nice guys begin to take responsibility for how they let people treat them, their own behavior begins to change. As they stop reinforcing things they aren't willing to tolerate, the people around them are given the opportunity to behave differently. This gives relationships a chance to survive and grow. Jake, an enlisted man in his mid-20s, is a good example of how tolerating intolerable behavior can kill a relationship, and how setting boundaries can give a relationship a chance to survive. Just prior to his marriage to his wife Keisha, Keisha had an affair with an old boyfriend. Because Jake didn't want to lose her, he forgave her and promised to never bring up her infidelity. This established a pattern of Keisha pretty much doing whatever she wanted, while Jake withheld his feelings and walked on eggshells. He would always measure his words in order to avoid saying anything wrong that might upset her. On one occasion, while they were out drinking with some friends, Keisha got drunk. Whenever she had too much to drink, she would become belligerent and promiscuous. On this occasion, she made several demeaning remarks to Jake and spent most of the evening slow dancing with other men in the bar. After holding his tongue as long as he could, Jake finally told Keisha that she was drunk and that it was time to go home. She swore at him and kept on doing what she was doing. Jake retaliated by calling her a bitch and drove home. One of her friends brought Keisha home the next morning. For the rest of the day, she gave Jake the silent treatment. He tried to hold out, but after a few hours of misery, he apologized for calling her a bitch. Later that week, he somewhat reluctantly talked about the episode in his No More Mr. Nice Guy group. The group members lovingly confronted him. They pointed out how his willingness to tolerate his wife's intolerable behavior gave her license to act in any way she pleased. They told Jake that the problem was not Keisha, it was him. Until Jake changed, his wife would have no incentive to change. By not setting boundaries, he was robbing his marriage of the opportunity to become what it could be. The next day, Jake confronted his wife. He acknowledged his role in their situation. He told her that he was no longer going to tolerate intolerable behavior. He told her his boundaries. He would no longer tolerate Keisha dancing or flirting with other men. He would not tolerate her demeaning him in front of their friends. He told her that if she wanted to stay married to him, she had to go to treatment for her drinking problem. Keisha responded by telling Jake that no one was going to tell her what to do. She packed a bag and moved out that night to a friend's house. Even though Jake was miserable for the next few days, he resisted the temptation to call her and beg her to come back. Instead, he called some guys in the group. 3 nights later, Keisha called and said she wanted to talk. She came over and told Jake that even though she initially wanted to tell him to go to hell, she knew he was right. For the first time in their marriage, she said she felt respect for him. She said she wanted to save their marriage and was willing to do whatever it took to make it work. The following week, Keisha entered treatment. Breaking Free, Activity 23. Before you can start setting boundaries, you have to become aware of how much you back up from your line to avoid conflict or to keep the peace. For the next week, observe yourself. Do you say yes when you would rather say no? Do you agree to do something to avoid conflict? Do you avoid doing something because someone might get upset at you? Do you tolerate an intolerable situation, hoping that it will just go away? Write these observations down and share them with a safe person. Take a walk on the wild side. There is no key to a smooth life. Being good or doing it right doesn't insulate nice guys from the chaotic, ever-changing realities of life. All the nice guy paradigm does is create wimpy men who allow bullies to kick sand in their face or shame them for loading the dishwasher wrong. As recovering nice guys begin to surrender, dwell in reality, express their feelings, face their fears, develop integrity, and set boundaries, they access a power that allows them to welcome and embrace the challenges and gifts of life. Life isn't a merry-go-round. It's a roller coaster. As they reclaim personal power, recovering nice guys can experience the world in all of its serendipitous beauty. Life won't always be smooth. It may not always be pretty. But it will be an adventure, one not to be missed.